Good morning, everyone. I'm going to open the February 8, 2012 session of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. We're now in order. And I am going to open an informational hearing today. First of all, an announcement, and I think I may be clearing the room out with this announcement. We have a number of late-breaking amendments for House Bill 4063. And in addition, we still do not have a fiscal on this bill, so I'm going to carry the bill over until Monday so that we can hear all of the amendments at the same time. I think it's just easier to deal with the bill that way. So those of you who are here for that bill, have a wonderful day. And with that, okay, I'm going to have an informational hearing on Senate Bill 338, and this is the task force on tuition waivers that we passed out last session. And with that, I'm going to call up, please, Val Conley from ODVA. And does it make sense to have Krissa Caldwell and John Turner and Dr. Holliday? If it makes sense for any or all of you to appear in a panel, I'll let you self-regulate the size and number of that panel, okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I guess I'll go first.
All right. Good morning.
We're not going to work it because we have two papers and amendments that need to be
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Val Conley, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I am here today on behalf of Director Jim Willis to report on the results of the Interim Task Force on Tuition Waivers, which was charged with determining a common tuition waiver policy for spouses and dependents of fallen and disabled veterans to be implemented by community college districts. Unfortunately, Mr. Willis is unable to testify today due to illness and sends his regrets. It is my unfortunate duty to report ODVA's dissatisfaction with the task force and its final report. During the task force's only meeting in December, ODVA staff voiced the agency's concern regarding several issues that were being considered by the task force and pointed out key areas of opposition. ODVA was assured following the meeting that its opposition would be noted in the report and that we would have an opportunity to comment before it was submitted. Neither happened. This body received the report without ODVA's review and missed several points we clearly and repeatedly communicated needed to be included in the final report. Days before the deadline for submission, ODVA staff attempted to contact the Community College Association seeking a copy of the draft report. ODVA never received it. In our opinion, the report submitted to the legislature was not done in consultation with ODVA as was required by the bill. That said, let me outline where we have disagreements with the report. The report rightly notes that we disagree with the community colleges regarding when the tuition waiver should be implemented. The community colleges believe the waiver should only be implemented after the survivor or dependent has exhausted their other federal funding sources, calling the program a last dollar waiver. We strongly oppose this concept. A waiver is just that, a waiver. The soldiers who lost their lives or were so severely injured that they rate a 100% service-connected disability did not put conditions on that sacrifice. Survivors and dependents also should not have conditions placed on a state policy that says we honor their sacrifice through a tuition waiver. The community college approach is no waiver at all. Senate Bill 338 required the task force to align community college district policies with those of the Oregon University system. We do not believe the report does that. Instead, it appears to take liberties with a statement made by OUS during the task force meeting in regard to the OUS thinking about changing to a last dollar policy. OUS had not begun formal discussions on the issue and expressed that it would engage ODVA for input if that was the direction the OUS wanted to explore. At this time, OUS still is a true waiver program as written in statute and as Senate Bill 338 charged the task force to align with. Further, the report indicates that the community colleges implemented the waiver as a last dollar program to keep the fiscal impact low and maintains that this was the original intent of the waiver. We do not agree with this position. The number of dependents who can take advantage of this waiver is relatively low, and adding a student to a class where the infrastructure for that class already exists does not cause excessive loss of revenue. We do not support the position that the potential for revenue is an actual loss of revenue. However, one of the most disappointing aspects about this report was its focus on a VA benefit called Dependents Educational Assistance, or DEA, which was not accurately described in the report. The report states that DEA is an entitlement and alludes that the benefit is a grant. It fails to mention that DEA is an allowance and not a tuition assistance program. Allowances are paid directly to dependents, not the school, and is used by dependents to help them attend school, which oftentimes means paying rent, buying groceries, and paying the electric bill so they can go to school using other means of financial aid, such as Pell Grants. This important point was communicated both during the task force meeting and in communications that followed. It is clear under this proposal that the community college's intent is to require dependents to file a federal claim for benefits and then require that benefit be signed away and applied to their tuition. Not only does this defeat the meaning of a waiver, I'm not even sure that that action is legal. We regret that ODVA cannot support this task force final report. We believe the policy decisions outlined in this report were decided long before the task force meeting because the position of the task force is similar to what the community colleges testified to during the 2011 regular session. Our input was not fully acknowledged and was given only cursory placement in the report, and we were not given the courtesy to review the report before it was submitted. We feel the community colleges have failed to do the right thing when it comes to our veterans, their survivors, and dependents. For your reference, I have provided, along with my written testimony, ODVA's addendum to the final report that outlines ODVA's key points of opposition and concern. This addendum was submitted to the task force yesterday. It is our opinion that at this point, the legislature needs to determine if it wants to provide a waiver, a true waiver, for those who have sacrificed so much. If so, we believe that mandate must come from this body. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Excuse me. Questions or comments for Deputy Director Conley? Yes, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just want to be clear because I'm troubled by what I'm hearing. I had met with a representative from community colleges, and I guess my take on it was if there's monies at federal level that's available for their education, why wouldn't we go after those dollars? We talk about a lot of dollars left on the table at the federal level that we're not accessing, and I thought that this was going to be that. I kind of felt like the understanding I had anyway was that the veteran still gets admitted to the community college, attends the classes, does all this. They're not out anything as the process goes through. And if the federal government benefit's not there, then that waiver does kick as a waiver. If it is there, then the community college would accept that, and then the remainder, whatever, again, would be waived. So I'm just trying to figure out, I want to make this simple on the veteran. I want to give, you know, provide what they've earned. But I also want to try to figure out what we're doing here and why it's problematic if we go after federal dollars that belong to the state anyway.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Matthews. Our contention is that tuition should be waived first and then apply for those federal dollars, such as a Pell Grant. But a dependent cannot be compelled to turn over their dependent's educational assistance, which is a VA program, educational assistance program. They cannot be compelled to turn those over to pay for those tuition, because the student, as long as he's enrolled in school, can use those monies for subsistence, for paying their living cost while they are enrolled in school.
Okay.
A Pell Grant. Our position is we want the schools to waive the tuition out of the gate and then apply for any federal grants that that student may be entitled to.
Follow up?
Please.
And I guess that's where my misunderstanding lied, is because I thought that's what we, in a sense, were doing. So I apologize for my confusion, but I thought that what we were doing was, getting them enrolled, getting them into the class, getting them started on their education, meanwhile working out the benefit end of it at the federal level first. And so, again, I apologize for my confusion, and it's helpful that you provided your concerns, and I appreciate that.
Absolutely, and it's my understanding that the Oregon University system is doing that, as outlined in that statute.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other members of the committee? Please, Representative.
Yeah, I'm pretty concerned about this too, and so I appreciate that. Just so I get it clear, is that ODVA was attended the first and only meeting of the task force, is that right?
Yes. Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Boone, we had two staff members that were at the task force meeting.
Okay. Yes. But then when the, when the report was out, there was not an opportunity for you to look at what actually came out of the meetings. Then.
That's correct. Before it was submitted, we didn't have the opportunity to review or provide input.
And a final follow-up.
Yes.
And when was that report delivered to the, wherever they were supposed to deliver it to, assumedly the legislature?
I believe it was the last week, so I couldn't.
So just recently. Okay, thank you. Yeah, thanks.
Val, I want to make sure that the veterans get every opportunity to take advantage of every possible benefit that is available to them. That is my key concern at this point, and I'm concerned, does last dollar, first dollar, middle dollar, mm-hmm. does any of that have any bearing on the benefits that a vet might have coming to him or her? Maybe I should ask that just a little differently. Does it diminish in any way the benefits that they could access, whether it be first or last dollar?
Are you talking about if they got the waiver?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No, it would not. Okay. It would not impact their VA benefit at all.
Okay.
And I would assume if they're eligible for dependents educational assistance, I don't know. I would assume they'd be eligible for a Pell Grant.
Okay.
Most are.
All right. And in terms of your participation in the report, I'm also assuming, maybe incorrectly, that there were meetings that your department did not attend because you were unaware of them?
Co-Chair Witt, if there were, Tom Mann and Nicole Hoft attended the meetings.
Okay.
If there were any meetings without our knowledge,
okay,
we're still unaware of that.
All right, fine. Anything further for Deputy Director Conley? Not seeing any. Thank you very, very much.
I got to step out of the room for a bit here. Chris Caldwell.
Good morning, Representative Escobar, members of the committee. My name is Krista Caldwell, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. I've been asked to provide information this morning on the background of the task force report and the background of the waivers as laid out in Senate Bill 338. There was a miscommunication. There was only one task force meeting, and we did ask afterwards if ODVA felt that we should have a second meeting, and we were told no, that one meeting was sufficient. I got no communications in the 2 months after that. I heard through the grapevine because they had requested from our lobbyist information, not from me, who was staffing as a state agency staffing this. So I didn't realize that they asked for the report, so I sent the report over. Unfortunately, I didn't know, I never heard from them, so I assumed what we'd done in the task force was fine, but that was a miscommunication between the lobby and me on what they wanted, since I never heard directly. So when we learned that they did want to provide additional information, I did offer to do the addendum, and that's why the addendum came in separate, so that we could give them their opportunity to ask for the report, although the task force was for the community college presidents and the recommendation to you specifically about how to align the policies. So that was a miscommunication that did happen, and there was only one task force meeting. So go ahead. Okay. Do you have the paper copy?
Yes,
we do.
Should I go ahead and I can go ahead?
Which one?
The Senate Bill 338 Task Force chart.
We need to get one of your kids from college to come in and help us out.
I know.
In fact, we need a. Is there a junior high student in the crowd?
Isn't that the truth? The task force charge is to address the issue of tuition waivers for dependents and unremarried spouses of service members who died in active duty, became 100% disabled as a result of a military-connected disability, or died as a result of a military service-connected disability. It was to recommend how to align with a similar tuition waiver offered by the Oregon University system. The task force was composed of the community college president, staffed by Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, and worked in consultation with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. The background, this began in 2008 when the legislature passed Senate Bill 1066, creating tuition waiver program intended to have minimal fiscal impact. When this bill first passed, the Senate Education Journal Government Committee directed OUS to create a program with minimal fiscal impact, so the bill would not require a referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Community colleges asked not to be included in the bill because community college tuition is set by locally elected boards, unlike OUS. OUS told the committee that they would adopt a program for open seats only to keep the cost minimal. However, OUS implemented the program as a full waiver with no restrictions, resulting in significant fiscal impact. Community colleges adopted programs applying federal financial aid prior to applying a waiver, but there were variations among the college programs. In order to keep costs low, federal aid was applied first. This approach is known as the last dollar. Colleges created programs as a true safety net intended to catch those who slipped through the cracks with other forms of financial aid. In previous sessions, ODVA and advocates voiced frustration that community college programs were not uniform in their eligibility requirements. While that has been addressed, the main sticking point remains that colleges have implemented the program as intended to result in a minimal fiscal impact. This is the real remaining issue. Colleges believe that federal dollars need to be applied first. If a student is not eligible or for some other reason does not receive such benefits, they qualify for the tuition waivers. The task force discussed the overall goal for the dependents and spouses to have the resources they need to attend college, not to have to wait for federal aid that sometimes is not timely. The presidents discussed waiving late fees when incurred, allowing reasonable amount of time for benefits to come in, and creating the greatest degree of flexibility for the students as possible. They felt it was important to look at all of the resources available, including dependents education assistant, the Pell Grant, and the Oregon Opportunity Grant. So far, the conversation around the waiver has simply been about whether to have a waiver or not to have a waiver, not about identifying unmet need. I'd like to note here that the use of allocated federal dollars first is a priority for a myriad of programs in Oregon and has a very long history. This part is not new. State and local dollars traditionally come into play to fill in what federal dollars don't cover. Prioritizing the use of local resources first contradicts common practice among involving federal dollars. So I'm on slide four. The Dependents Education Assistance Program is a federal allowance to dependents intended to cover tuition fees and personal expenses for spouses and dependents of fallen or disabled soldiers. This is the current payment table for recipients. A full-time student receives $957 per month when enrolled. The program offers up to 45 months of education benefits. These benefits may be used for degree and certificate programs, apprenticeship, and on-the-job training. For spouses, this also includes correspondence courses. Remedial deficiency and refresher courses may be approved under certain circumstances. The next slide shows other financial aid available. One of the policy questions to be asked if a student receives all of these forms of available aid, is there a need to fully waive tuition? Currently, the community colleges approach the waiver as a safety net for students not receiving these type of aid. It's important to note that federal veterans benefits, such as the DEA program, do not count as income when determining the student's financial aid package. Full DEA benefits would not reduce a student's Pell Grant or Opportunity Grant. The next slide has the average cost of attendance at Oregon Community Colleges, and it's $4,126 annually. This does not include living expenses. The next table shows the great degree to which the programs are currently aligned. DEA benefit eligibility is included for context. I'm on slide 7. In a few cases, colleges appear to have used DEA requirements to develop their policy. Were OUS to change their program to apply federal aid first, the programs would be more closely aligned. So the issues covered by the task force include the overall goal of dependents tuition waiver to provide safety net, ensuring eligible students have resources needed to go to college. Federal and state benefits currently available are the Federal Dependents Education Assistance Program, Federal Pell Grant, and the Oregon Opportunity Grant. Additional considerations should be made, such as waiving late fees and allowing students to begin class before federal benefits are received. Issues raised by the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is tuition waiver eligible students should not be compelled to apply for federal benefits or aid. Waivers should be applied first dollar, regardless of other aid, and federal dependents education assistant goes directly to students, not the colleges. So the conclusions of the task force are to answer the question in Senate Bill 338, what does it take to align community college tuition waivers with the current Oregon University System tuition waiver? Colleges would have to move to a first dollar waiver. The presidents recommend applying federal dollars prior to using local resources. So the policy question before the legislature is whether to apply federal or state and local dollars first. And John Turner is here to speak from the local perspective, and Joel Holliday from OUS has joined us to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning, Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Esquivel. My name is John Turner. I'm the president of Blue Mountain Community College in Pendleton, and I had the privilege of appearing before this committee last session. And I guess I want to say that I'm somewhat disappointed, even shocked, by the characterization of the ODVA that kind of makes it sound like we're a bunch of mean-spirited folks that don't like veterans out there. And nothing could be more further from the truth. We actually started this waiver program in the 2005-2006 era, 2 years before the governor and the state government asked us to do this, because we like veterans. I'm a veteran, my vice president of operations is a Navy veteran, my vice president in charge of student services is an Army veteran, my head of HR is a veteran. We have set up all kinds of veteran support programs. We are a service members opportunity college, as are a number of other colleges in the state. What does that mean? It means we go out of our way to be flexible to try and help transcript training credits for service members when they come to us. We do things to bend over backwards to help veterans survive and thrive in a college environment. We've also been named as a military-friendly college by military.com. We've started a veterans club to help veterans get together and self-identify on our college. And so I guess I'm somewhat frustrated that this one issue of first dollar or last dollar is being used against us somehow. To stay here and say that this has no fiscal impact is untrue. College by college, yeah, it is small numbers. But if you add all 17 colleges together, it does in fact have a fiscal impact. Representative Matthews asked earlier whether or not the DEA monies was designed to pay for tuition. The answer I think that I got when I was listening in the back was that, well, it ought to be used for living expenses first, when in fact DEA dollars are specifically designed to be used for tuition and fees. Now, I think it's only reasonable for us to apply the federal dollars first, not leave them on the table, and we are committed to helping the veterans out if there's any expenses left over for tuition, to waive those.
Dr. Turner, I think we have a question here.
So can I ask, how many students, I hate to interrupt, how many students do you currently have that you are servicing who qualify under any program, whether it's last dollar, first dollar? I mean, how many kids do you have on your campus?
I should have brought those numbers with me, Representative Parrish. I don't know, but it was just a few for BMCC in the past year. Let's see. Number of received waivers was 15 students for a total of $7,852.
Okay. If you had a student that came to you, though, and said, you know, look, I'm sole student, I don't have a parent handy, and I grew up like this, I'm still paying student loans because I had nobody, you know, to support me. You know, who says, I appreciate that we, you know, used up my financial aid for tuition and things. I'm just struggling with housing. I mean, do you have a mechanism in place for a kid who truly is in that situation where they're...
We have lots of students in that situation, not just veterans. In fact, most of our students feel some sort of financial strain. We do have a local foundation. We gave out something like $175,000 in student scholarships last year. They're designed specifically for those types of students.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Co-Chair Esquivel.
Thank you.
Chair Witt.
President Turner, I don't think what you do is the question here. You are the icon of community colleges, and you're what should be done. We understand that. You've been here twice now, but it's because you do so well and do a great job with our veterans. And that, I thank you, being a veteran, and you're a veteran. But tell me, what does Klamath Community College do? What does Southwest Community College do? What does Rogue Community College do? I don't think your college, your community college is this is, I think you do an exemplary job.
Exceptional.
But I'm not sure what the rest of them are doing. And I'm not sure that you're able to answer that.
Well, I'm not sure I am either. So let me just refer to...
But for you, I say thank you.
Here's the list of Servicemen's Opportunity Colleges, and Rogue is in fact listed as one. So is Southwest. I don't see Klamath on here. But Iowa DuCedes Portland Community College and Clackamas and others that serve, I would say that more than half the community colleges in the state are served by service members' opportunity colleges. I don't know how else to answer that.
Well, we should have, what do we have, 17 community colleges?
We do, and there are
and we need 17.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Yeah, that's what we're striving for here.
Sure.
So, thank you.
Please proceed.
I think I really said all I want to say with one final comment, Co-Chair Witt, is we got a lot of mileage out of our campus veteran services officers. As you are probably aware, we've seen in this state somewhere around a 25% to 30% increase in students over the last few years. At the same time, we've been forced to cut staff. Those campus veteran services officers, even when we only got them 3 or 4 days a month, gosh, the students loved them. They were so much help getting particularly the veteran students directed towards what benefits they rated, how to tap into the various support mechanisms that were there for them. So I know money's tight, and my only recommendation would be that if there were some way to restore the campus veteran service officers, we sure got a lot of bang for the buck out of those folks.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I mentioned that point last week. I talked to Dr. Tota at Clem Gorge, and he had mentioned the same thing, that really there is a vacancy now with not having the they were on a rotation. I didn't ask him how often the campus veteran services officer came by, but he said there's a definite hole there. I just wanted to weigh in. This may not be the most popular thinking in the room, but after working on this project this past year, nearly a year, I've been thinking a lot about actually presenting a bill for next session that would require all state agencies and programs to look for federal dollar first. I can't for the life of me understand, with us in our financial situation the way we are, why in the world we would not look to the federal dollar first. We do it in mental health. We're looking at trying to create more community-based group homes, because we can, if we do it right, we structure it right, we can get federal Medicaid dollars for those where we can't get them into the state hospital. Things like that. There are a lot of examples where we're trying to position ourselves in a better way for federal dollars. As long as we're meeting the need, whether it's veterans education or mental health or whatever that is, as long as everybody's doing their best to meet the need, and I think that's where Representative Escoval was coming from, as long as we know that all 17 community colleges are doing their best. But I'm not going to sit up here and say anybody in this room should be going for first dollar. I have a real fiscal, philosophical disagreement with that, and like I said, I would like to expand that concept and actually require all agencies and programs to look at federal dollar first. Not to not do what's required of them, but do it with federal dollars first if possible, if they're available. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Representative Matthews.
Just a follow-up to that comment, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I recall when I, you know, ETS'd out of the Army, I came home and I attended Mount Hood Community College, and I did so on the VEEP at the time, and I received a check, a benefit check, some with tuition, some with living expenses. So I agree with you, actually, as long as we're not applying monies that should be used for living expenses for the veteran as well, and taking that and putting all that towards tuition, leaving the veteran with nothing because we have no assistance programs that allow them some living expense. But I agree with you as well. I think that there's a lot of, we talk about it, and we've talked about it now for the 3 or 4 years I've been here, dollars on the table at the federal level. So I really think we should be going after those dollars and getting those for us. In the end, my biggest concern is that we don't delay the education process for the veteran. And I think that we're all on that page. And I think to characterize it any different, and I understand, sir, why you would be offended. I understand that. I don't know that anybody meant to throw a dart directly at you, but certainly if I were in your seat, I'd have the same sentiment. But I want to say, let's figure this one out, and let's go after the dollars that are due the veteran. They've earned it.
Thank you very much. Dr. Holliday.
Good morning.
Welcome back to our committee.
Thank you. It's good to be here, sir.
Thank you for your presence. Have you had an opportunity to present your statement? I was out of the room earlier, so I don't know if you talked while I was out or not.
Chair Witt, Chair Esquivel, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Holliday. I'm Assistant Vice Chancellor, OUS. I'm only here to answer questions, sir, and because OUS has come up a lot in this conversation.
All
so
right.
I'm here to, and Bridget Burns is with me as well. So.
Well, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate your making yourself available. It's greatly appreciated. I have kind of a follow-up question to the line of discussion that we just went through. And President Turner, I appreciate very much your discussion about how you try and be flexible. And I think that's critically important in this instance. And I know that one of the recommendations or considerations, I guess it's referred to, that should be made is waiving late fees. And I'm presuming that some of the money that might come from the federal government gets there a little late, and we have a student that, absent some kind of assistance, couldn't be going to school. Students are all poor. We know that. We've all been through that. And that is your last dollar when you're a student. So do you know, has this become standard operating procedure among all of the community colleges? And maybe this is a question for Krissa, I don't know. But I want to make sure that we're making things as easy as we possibly can for these folks who are dependent upon federal dollars that may not arrive in a timely fashion.
Thank you, Coach Hewitt. I'm happy to try to answer your question, and while I don't pretend to speak for all 17 colleges, this issue was addressed when we met as a task force, and we wanted to make sure that what you're suggesting, in fact, was our practice. So during the task force meeting, we got Central Oregon's registrar on the line, Central Oregon Community College, and she said, oh yeah, we'd waive that. That's no problem. While they're waiting to get their federal money, sure. Just to make sure, I asked my registrar when I got home from that meeting. I said, what's our practice? He said, oh, this is not a big deal. We'll waive it. And we have book vouchers in place, too, so they haven't received their money yet. Here's a voucher. Go to the bookstore. When your federal assistance comes in, pay us back. So while we're having this discussion, everybody else's head was nodding that this was something that they wanted to make sure that was being done. I can't tell you, sitting here in testimony, that it is in fact in policy at all 17 community colleges. But I'm confident that folks out there want to make sure that if there's a delay in receiving the federal funds, that we'll accommodate that somehow.
Now, I thank you very much. I think there are a number of us that are concerned with the loss of campus VSOs, and thank you for your forceful statement in support of our attempting to return that those folks at the earliest opportunity. With them absent from your campus, you obviously don't have access to them like you would have at one time. Have you heard from any former campus VSOs, or has the community college system, or any VSOs that about this issue of first versus last dollar?
Personally, no, I have not.
Okay. And is to help kind of set the stage or background information, and again, I apologize for being out of the room at the beginning of your panel's testimony, but Krissa, could you briefly explain to us the financial conditions that the community college system faces? I don't believe that they're any different than other branches of state government, that you have taken considerable number of budget cuts along with the rest of state government. Could you just give us a very 35,000-foot elevation overview of your financial condition?
We have taken the cuts, as all state agencies have, but the impact of the colleges is greater, as some agencies have the same problem in the numbers that have increased, where some of our, I think Central Oregon Community College has doubled in size in the last 4 years. The number of students attending has increased, and the dollars aren't per student. The dollar is it's a formula, sure, on a bucket of money.
Yes.
And so the more students you have, the less you have per student, and it's dropped dramatically, like 40% how much they get per student in some cases.
So we've seen a bubble in your matriculation due in part, I think, to a very long and deep recession, and a number of people decided that they're going to go back to school to enhance their credentials and assist in their job searches, I'm led to understand.
Exactly. Representative Witt, members of the committee, I think you heard in this committee on Monday, the National Guard soldiers that came home, that over 50% unemployed. At one point it was 70%, it was down to 50%. The numbers dropped down, I believe, around 20% because they've gone back to school, not because they found jobs. So the growth, there's a lot of pressure on community colleges to accommodate these growing numbers.
All right. I would like to ask the three of you if any of you are aware of any instances where a veteran would lose an opportunity to take advantage of benefits that might be available to him or her based on a first or last dollar application.
If I thought that there were, I would probably change my opinion on this, but I'm not convinced that there are any veterans out there that are losing an opportunity. I think our biggest problem is veterans have a difficult time navigating the system, figuring out what the policies are, learning the rules. And there again is where folks like the Veteran Services Officers really came into bear.
Please.
Chair Witt, Chair Escovel, members of the committee, I would agree with President Turner on that. I believe that whether it's first dollar or last dollar, if the purpose is to waive tuition, that will be done in either case. The student will not be charged tuition for either of these scenarios. I think it's true, and I by the way, I think you'd be well served if you wish to get into the details, even though it's something of a rabbit hole, to bring in some financial aid officers who could really tell you how it works on the ground. But in general, I think it's fair to say that the Pell Grant, the Opportunity Grant, other benefits might be stretched a little thinner if it's applied on a last dollar basis.
I see. Well, thank you very much. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of a follow-up on the question you had. I had the specific conversation again with Dr. Tota at Columbia Gorge Community College, and in that specific situation, he said they would allow the student to enter the program right away. Their financial aid would work with that student, assuming that they might get Pell or DEA or whatever else might be available. If that did not come through, they would not write it off. They would probably scholarship it or whatever else, but that student would not be on the hook for college debt because they started. So that's Dr. Tota's testimony from Columbia Gorge.
Well, that's thank you, Representative Huffman. That's very encouraging, and I think that that's precisely the kind of flexibility that President Turner was talking about here earlier. So I'm pleased, and I think that we should recognize the efforts that the community colleges are making to bridge those gaps when they happen, because it's certainly not the student's fault, but it becomes the student's problem. I very much appreciate the fact that the community colleges are sharing in helping solve that problem. So you're making it possible for people to go to school who financially just couldn't do it otherwise. So thank you. Co-Chair Escovel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I went to school on the GI Bill, and it's been so long ago, I think they telegraphed the money, I'm not sure. But it was a benefit that we had earned by being in the service, and I want to say I received $700 and some a quarter or a term or something like that, and it paid for my books, it paid for my tuition, all that. But I don't remember a difficulty at all of the system. Why is there a difficulty today? Boy, we have just a pause here. Because that system worked well. What's happened?
Representative Esquivel, members of the committee, what's happened in the process of getting their financial aid?
I have no idea, but something's wrong because
question?
I signed up one time.
Yeah.
And from then on, I was taken care of for every class that I took. What's happened to that system?
I believe that system is in place in the same way, except it does take time to get the federal benefits, and there's a process they go through. And as far as the financial aid and the financial aid offices, part of what's changed in the last few years is what we were just talking about. The dollars have decreased so much, the student number of students have increased so much, and you have the same number of people, maybe less people, processing the financial aid packages. So from the college's side, it may be taking longer. Also, on the federal side, I'm not sure the length of time that it takes.
That's what I mean. Is it the federal that's stringing us out, or, I mean, on receiving money, or what's the real problem here?
If I may, Co-Chair Esquivel, our college prides itself on getting the financial aid checks out to students by the end of the first week of classes. So, you know, if they come in and work the system and sign up for the aid that's due, I'm not sure that we have a problem right now, so I'm a little bit confused.
But, I mean, are you having problems supplementing part of that from the feds? Or, I mean, because this has got to be a commingling of different aspects, isn't it?
Well, I would repeat my answer to Representative Witt, was that if there is a delay in the financial aid that's coming in, whether it's Pell Grant or whatever, we won't charge the late fees on that if we have a reasonable expectation that the student is eligible for some sort of federal financial aid. But I will corroborate what Chris had just said, is that 5 years ago my college generated somewhere around $5.5 million in financial aid each year, had three staff members. Last year it was about $12.5 million in financial aid. Same three folks doing this, so.
Representative Esquivel, members of the committee, another part to that has to do when the student applies. So some of it is the responsibility of the student and the timeliness that they get the paperwork in. And if for some of them, if they've been laid off from their job in August and decide, well, I'm going back to school, it takes a little bit of time to do the FAFSA and all the financial aid pieces that go along with that, which would cause a delay. So there's multiple answers to your question, I think.
Thank you very much. Any additional questions or comments for this panel? Not seeing any. Thank you all very, very much. I'd like to note that we have received written testimony from Robert Thornhill for today's record. And Bridget Burns, I'd like to ask you to come up if you would, please.
Chairs, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. For the record, Bridget Burns, Chief of Staff for the Oregon University System. I'm just here today to talk to you about this issue on a broader level. I've observed the testimony that's come from ODBA as well as our partners in the community colleges. And my perspective is that this feels a bit like an artificial conflict because I think about how we could evaluate whether or not we need to change anything, and I look to, does this actually negatively impact the lives of students? And I do not know that this actually does. I would appeal to you to consider the possibility of treating our processes as wholly separate. The community colleges have completely different missions, locations, governance structures. They have different tuition costs. They also have different costs of living, potentially, because if you don't have to relocate to a university that's far away, you could potentially not have to spend as much on your living expenses. This all adds up to the cost for education, which directly impacts what your financial aid package looks like. Whereas we believe that going first dollar works for us, we think going last dollar, if it works for them, that's entirely appropriate. We trust their judgment, and we would appeal to you to consider that as a possibility. However, I would say we are open. Whatever this committee believes, if you want us to change to last dollar to middle dollar, we will follow your direction. It just seems easiest, however, if we would just stick with the process that we believe has worked for us. And I'm also saying that, acknowledging that our partners in the community colleges came up with this idea originally, and they were doing this before being asked to do it, and they found a process that really works for them and meets the needs of their student populations. The only thing I was going to flag is that the Pell Grant entirely covers the cost of tuition at a community college. It doesn't necessarily at an OUS institution. So they have just completely different cost structures. And so how they bundle financial aid very much is influenced by that. The way we do it is we apply the waiver, so that covers tuition, but that still leaves fees. That still leaves living expenses. So after we apply the waiver, then we apply the Pell Grant. And this leads to our students having usually a check that comes that allows them to be able to support those expenses. Now, granted, they have higher tuition, they have entirely different costs, so that works for us. But I don't know how to run community colleges, and I would never want to tell them how to do their job. And I really respect our partners there and just want to be as collaborative as possible. And this seems like the right solution, but again, whatever the committee's direction, we would be happy to adopt. The last thing I would say is that the financial aid officials that I work with, I trust more than I trust anyone. The people who work in that field are good people who hear stories on a daily basis and that are heart-wrenching, and they do everything in their power to be able to meet the needs of underrepresented students, low-income students, and populations that we deeply care about, like veteran students. So I would encourage us to be as unprescriptive as possible for those folks, because my experience has been that when a financial aid official has resources and discretion, they use it wisely, and they always use it at the end of the day to improve the lives of students and make access something that is possible. So that's my appeal to you, is whatever you say, we will follow. However, it seems like letting us do things separately makes more sense. But again, I leave that to you all. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for Ms. Burns? I'm not seeing any. Thank you so very much. Just before you leave, I'd like to ask you as well, are you aware of any instances where veterans might lose an opportunity to access benefits where first or last dollar to come to bear?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, I have never heard of an instance. So that's, again, the criteria for evaluation I would use is if I hear a story, then that gives me an indication there's fire somewhere. But I haven't heard anything at our community colleges or at our OUS institutions.
Bridget, thank you so very much. Appreciate your willingness to add your point of view here today. Thank you. I'm aware that we have a couple of other college presidents in the audience. I have been told before that when I make note that people are in the audience and present them an opportunity to testify, they feel compelled to do so, and that it catches people off guard at some point. But I certainly want to recognize that we have some folks that have traveled a considerable distance, the presidents of both Clackamas and Klamath Falls Community Colleges. I don't know if we have, I start naming one or two and then you run the risk that you've overlooked others, but certainly would love to extend the opportunity for you to testify if you would so choose. And please do not feel compelled. But we do appreciate the fact that you've traveled a considerable distance to attend this hearing. Thank you very much. Good morning, and welcome to you both.
Well, thank you very much, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. I was next door, actually, in the Capitol hearing, but I did want to come because I think there was a question whether Klamath had a policy to waive the last dollar. And
would you introduce yourself?
I'm Gerald Hamilton, president of Klamath Community College.
Thank you, Doctor.
And I did want to assure you we were proud that we were one of the first in the state to have that policy, as I do believe all community colleges do. Haven't all seen that policy, but working through the president's council, we have talked many times, and everyone has talked about having a policy, and so we do have a policy that does waive that. We are proud of the work we do for veterans. As a matter of fact, we have converted a position in our college, and other work is being picked up, so we have a person that is directed at those issues and to work with the veterans on navigating what can be a very complicated, confusing system for them. And so that we have tried to make our college resources completely available to them. You know, again, we're proud of that work. We do waive late fees. We have a brand new bookstore, so I hadn't thought about a book voucher, but believe me, tomorrow that will be discussed, and so that will be taken care of. It's just simply the way we have done textbooks in the past without a bookstore hasn't let us accommodate that, but that's something that we will be working on. So I just wanted to come up and reassure you that we do have a policy that does allow for last dollars for dependents and spouses of 100% disabled veterans, and we are, again, proud of the work that we do for veterans. So thank you.
Thank you very much, and we are very proud and appreciative of the fact that your community college is another one that is trying very hard to accommodate the needs of our veterans. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Escoval, members of the committee, my representative. For the record, my name is Joanne Truesdell. I'm president of Clackamas Community College. Chair Escoval, you had mentioned what's so complicated now. 30-some-odd years ago, I happened to have the privilege of working in the Veterans Department at Clackamas Community College under a two-tour Vietnam Marine vet. And in those days, there were several chapters, fairly straightforward, and everybody seemed to know where they were. In that program. It was very streamlined, and while there were still glitches, I remember the tremendous amount of expletives sometimes that would go on in the office when benefits didn't
come in on
time.
I'm sure they weren't from the Navy, were they?
No, not at all. That it would that there would still be some glitches in the system. Currently, though, we have a varied group of individuals who have served our country, and that varied group of individuals who are on active duty have a variety of benefits that are available to them that look and manage very differently. And that is just echoing in President Turner's request about the VSO. That's what's so helpful because right now our veterans are even facing things such as specific courses, or if it's a hybrid course, how much time do you have? The course will be paid for by their benefits if it meets and convenes for a certain number of hours on campus. But if it convenes for less on campus and is more delivered by hybrid, it becomes disqualified. So it is not like in the day when a program was a program, and if you did the body of work in the program, you are eligible. There is such a variety of difference among the benefits that creates that complication. And so I just want to say that's one aspect of it. And the other aspect of it is that we've had at our institution about a threefold increase in the number of people just in general who are applying for aid and the number of people who apply for veterans benefits. We've also declined 37% in state revenue. And so we have kept intact our Veterans Services Office, our Veterans Education Training Center office that we committed to, and our financial aid, but we have not been able to add staff, and we're in the process of streamlining. The VSO person was very helpful. And lastly, I think there's an important question that we also need to be describing, and that is that As we work with veterans, and certainly in our institutions, in the Veterans Education Training Center, there are some times when it is best that a veteran delay their education entry to the next term. Because it's not whether or not we would waive the tuition, it's do they have the other support mechanisms in place in order to be sure that when they begin, they are successful and are not owing any of their veterans benefits back if they end up not being successful for that term. And that is incredibly important. For veterans, because it can, if we move too quickly and say, sure, you know, everything's in place, we'll just give you the tuition waiver, y'all come, and your benefits aren't in the line, aren't coming in, you may not have childcare, you may not have rent for the next month, you may not have food. That will create a lack of success. You drop out midterm with us, we're not going to ask for the payment of fees back or the payment of tuition back, but your benefits will be affected. And I think that there's a broader piece here that we want to look at holistically. I think that the first dollar, last dollar issue is truly, are we getting people served? And the answer is yes, and I think that Ms. Burns brings up a great point, is the university system is several times more expensive at the tuition level than ours. And I would just hearken back to other programs that we had in the past, that we've had in the past, where we were needing emergency medical training, nurses, and so forth. And at that time, the legislature allowed us to do last dollar in because they recognized the difference between the cost in our program versus the cost in the university program, and were able to make the difference. And it made a difference in the number of people who made it through the programs. People made it through the programs. It was really just, it was really truly, are we getting people through? So, thank you.
Okay, who's first?
Rock, paper, scissors out here.
Representative Parrish.
Joanne, thank you for coming and talking to us about this. So SB 338, we've asked a lot about like veterans and dollars for veterans, last in, first in benefits, but SB 338 was actually about dependents on remarried spouses. That's a very small, it's a small category. Of course, I still, housing for me is always going to be the biggest issue. You might have somebody who's a truly parentless child.
Absolutely.
In your schools, where the first in, last out dollars or whatever, last dollar, first dollar would have some impact for somebody who's truly, you know, parentless without housing options and really on their own. That, I do worry about that. How many people right now do you think fit the designation under SB 338? So not veterans, but we're talking about spouses and children of veterans who are fallen or 100% service disabled or, you know, meet the terms of this law. And then, or the task force. And then the other question I would have is, you know, where are you, when you guys are funding this, where are you pulling that from? Because, you know, the university system, not my alma mater down at Southern, they don't have big pools of money, but our bigger schools have some decent pools of money foundationally that I just don't think, you know, I've never written a foundation check to PCC and I attended there for a year, mm-hmm. right? So versus somebody at the University of Oregon who's going to write a check and put dollars into their foundation. So how are you funding the difference when you're paying for one of these students?
I'm co-chair with Representative Parrish. We actually have we've been fortunate in that in our area we've had industry representatives who serve the defense industry come forward and create an endowment. Their goal was $1 million endowment. It's about 3/4 funded, and so there are opportunities for students to also apply, and that may in fact be additional money. I think when we're looking at a student, and really any student, because a number of our students are in a similar situation, there's an item called need. And if there's unmet need, then we address that through going through the continuum. Do they have resources here? If yes, then they apply for them here. If they have resources here, if yes, they apply for them here. Workforce Investment Act dollars, Pell, scholarships, anything else that we have available. And then if there is still an issue, then the college simply waives it. We have an unrecorded revenue. Last year, we did about $1 million worth of unrecorded revenue as a result of it. $1 million is 3% of our operating budget right now. And so we are still committed to doing that. From a student perspective of how many students meet this definition and have come forward and accessed, we right now probably, in terms of all population, I believe we had six this year. None that had unmet need because of our foundation and their activity there. That's not necessarily what would happen at other institutions. But,
and you guys do a great job with that, so thank you.
And committee members, I apologize if I missed some of you who had questions or comments, but I think I might have skipped over Co-Chair Esquivel, and if I did, I apologize.
Well, I just wanted to see if we'd changed the name of the street from Girard to something else down there at the college.
Co-Chair Esquivel, no, it's still Girard Way.
Okay.
And will be forever.
he did some great work for you.
Yes, I have to. Bill is wonderful and has supported us for many, many years.
I was there for when they unveiled Girard Way on campus. They named the street after. It's a short sign, but it's...
Oh!
I won't use that.
Is that a relatively short street?
Yeah, there we go. No, it's short-sighted, but anyways... any other members with questions or comments? President Truesdell, I think when Co-Chair Esquivel was asking the question about why are we having the slip-ups with federal money getting here timely, I read from your body language that maybe you had some insight on that particular problem.
Co-Chair Witt, that's the challenges. They're equally backed up. And also, like I said before, there's the complexity of which funds you're drawing from.
Mm-hmm.
The paperwork that's necessary is complicated. The VSO that we had, the Veteran Services Officer, helped tremendously ensure that when the individuals, veterans or family members, were applying, that they knew every in and out and could make sure that every document was submitted. And so sometimes it's that which is a real challenge. And also it depends on when you apply for those benefits and how they time in with when tuition, when your rent's due. And it's just all of that. It is just a much more complicated world if we could ever think about it, even with automatic deposits.
Yes. Well, and we have to remember, too, that while all of this has become vastly more complicated, each and every turn is an opportunity for a veteran not to get through the door.
Absolutely.
And certainly our committee appreciates very, very much all of your efforts in making sure that those doors remain open. And that we also appreciate the fact that, in essence, you were carrying a number of these veterans until their money arrives, and it's the right thing to do, and we appreciate it. We realize it comes at a cost to you, but thank you for making this work.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yes, one last thing. When you're talking about making things complicated, there's nothing complicated. We make it complicated. The federal government makes it complicated. The state government makes it complicated. When I was in Vietnam, we had at any given time 250,000 troops there.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant there was a heck of a lot more people going to school with the GI Bill at that time than there is today. But yet it's more complicated. I guess I just don't get it. And that's nothing reflecting of you. I'm just venting about the federal government and the bureaucracy. It just astounds me.
Mr. Chair, for the record, too, she was like 6 years old when she was working at the college back then.
Oh,
so.
Well, thank you so much.
Cannot be blamed.
Here. Actually, she went in with her mother and grandma at the time.
Thank you very, very much. Certainly appreciate the great work that you're doing.
30 years experience at the college.
Is there anyone else from the public that would like an opportunity to... be part of our public hearing today, or public informational hearing, rather. Excuse me.
Okay.
Please, come forward, Tom.
Out there. Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Mann with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Great to see you all. I got a different job now, so
welcome.
I don't get to come to the legislature very often. So
we miss you.
I got let out of my office. It's a very exciting day for me. I wanted to address Co-Chair Witt's question about, have there been students that have had that issue? You may recall during the 2011 session, you had a veteran by the name of Wayne Harvey in front of your committee. He's the commander of the Retired Enlisted Association, and he's a 100% service-connected veteran, and his daughter did have an issue. What happens when this happens, when a veteran has an issue or a dependent or a survivor, they usually call their legislator, and then their legislator calls our department, and then we get involved with the financial aid folks and the certifying officials and all those. So I don't believe the college presidents, it would rise to their level of knowing that.
Right.
We've had Senator Boquist and Senator Atkinson and some other folks call us regarding some of this. So there have been some bumps in the road. One of the big bumps was, did summer term count in this waiver program at the university system? We just went through that. I got to tell you, Joe Holliday is just a stud. He and I work very closely together on these things, and we get these things worked out. But there have been bumps in the road where there have been late fees charged. There have been
delays.
There have been lab fees. Wayne Harvey testified that he had to actually take out a student loan for his daughter because the waiver was not applied at a university, and that caused him financial hardship. So I didn't want you to be under the impression that there is nothing happening on that, because there is. It's like any program, I think. There are bumps in the road, and we have to go solve those things. The second thing I want to clarify, as we talk about survivors, which are usually widows and dependents, and we talk about those spouses and dependents of 100% disabled veterans, which is what this is all about. When the DEA benefit comes, if you read the law, and I think that's in our testimony, the law says it can be used for multiple purposes, and it's part of its living expenses, part of it can be tuition, part of it can be different things. The difficulty that the deputy testified to is, when someone receives a veteran benefit personally, you can't compel them to spend it on what you want them to spend it on. For example, I'm a service-connected disabled vet, and I get a compensation every month. You can't tell me how to spend that. So when the dependent gets DEA, the difficulty of that federal allowance is the legislature or nobody else can say, and you must spend that on your tuition. Because the federal law says you can spend it on a plethora of different things that includes tuition. So I wouldn't want to leave you with the impression that you're going to be able to say, we want to collect last dollar for the waiver, first dollar federal dollars, that DEA must go to the colleges. You just don't have the authority in the state to do that. So I want to clarify that point for you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Tom, thank you. I would suggest that there's some personal responsibility for the veteran to, if they want to go to college, they should direct those dollars appropriately. But Wyckoff was laughing back there, and I wanted to explain. When you said that it probably wouldn't rise to the president of the community college, a number of the 17 presidents know me, because when I get a complaint, that's where I go first.
Our department thanks you.
Co-Chair Esquivel.
No, thank you. I believe that's probably pretty accurate, Tom, because if my memory serves me correct, I used to get a check once a quarter or once a term, and then I went out and I paid my tuition, I paid my books, I paid everything, I think, at that point.
Yes, sir.
Representative Boone.
Thank you. Okay, Tom, now I'm scared. You said you have a different job. Who am I going to call?
You can still call me, but in the back there, Nicole Hoft has taken my place as the public information manager, and I am now the administrator of the Veterans Services Division, so I'm kind of overseeing all the veteran programs for the department at this point. But you can call me anytime.
Okay, thank you.
You will.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Tom. Appreciate that. Committee members, we don't have a formal findings process in this meeting, but I think that our opinion would have a great deal of sway. And in fact, we have heard from a number of the witnesses that they are more than willing to do whatever, in essence, we would like them to do. And I think we're all very appreciative of that. I think the first conclusion that I have drawn today is that we have or had and still have a lot of folks that came to this hearing. And a lot of folks traveled a considerable distance. And we had folks from ODVA, we had OSU, we had the community colleges. Frankly, this is one of the largest and best attended hearings that our committee has had for an informational hearing. And that tells me something. That tells me that everyone cares deeply about making sure that veterans get their benefits. That's why they're here today. And I'm very pleased that that so many folks care so deeply about that. That's the first thing that I take away. That's the most important thing that I take away from this informational hearing. And as folks try and carry out their individual missions, they do that from their own agency's perspective. And I think that any one of us can try and help veterans from our own vantage point. And I think that's what has led us to this meeting here today. So keep in mind that there may have been differences of how we carry out the mission, but the overall mission is servicing those veterans. And I thank everyone that's here today for caring so deeply. The next thing that that comes to my mind, I'm stating the obvious here, but it's important, and it's the backdrop, I think, for everything that we do as a committee and as a state legislature. We're now in Oregon into the 3.5 years of recession, and some folks will say, well, you know, the recession ended a couple of years ago. Not in my district, and not in a lot of other districts that are represented here. This is the longest and deepest recession that we've faced since the Great Depression. And this has been a double whammy for the resources that much of our state faces. On the one hand, our state agencies don't have a lot of operating revenue because we here at the dais have cut you, and cut you again, and cut you again. And it's not a pleasant task that we undertake, but we recognize that we ask so much of you on a diminished budget. And the fact that you would take it upon your own to bridge the gap when federal money is late coming, we certainly appreciate that, because that's one one additional burden that we have saddled you with. But with that said, money is precious. It's precious to each and every state agency that's out there. And with that, I would recognize Representative Huffman and his earlier comments about first and last dollar. Representative, any further statement?
No, I was actually sitting here thinking about how we're having a conversation about something that seems to be... the result is that folks in the room are taking care of our veterans.
That's right.
And I'm sitting here, Representative Esquivel was saying, you know, why is it taking longer than it used to? And so I'm sitting here going, why is my appeal taking 3 years, you know, to wait on an appeal? And there are a lot of things taking longer. And as a disabled veteran, I'm asking that all the time. Why is it taking longer? Why is the system taking longer? Thank goodness our partners in this room have not taken years to come up with solutions for our veterans. Could you pass that along to the folks that work with appeals? Maybe they could learn from it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Other members? Co-Chair Esquivel.
Yes, and you hit on a great point there. I remember when I was diagnosed with diabetes from Agent Orange, and I was on the Tiger Fast Track to receive my 20% disability, which wasn't anything. It was, I don't know, $200 a month or whatever it was. So I get this letter and this check that was retroactive back 18 months congratulating me on my Fast Track.
Yeah.
I was astounded. 18 months, so that's the Tiger fast track. So I'm just very fortunate that I wasn't on the slow track, because I may still be waiting.
In their defense, they could have gone alphabetical.
Yeah, Air Force,
Army. No, I'm not thinking of my branch.
Oh, there you go.
Representative Parrish.
I guess, first of all, I appreciate the fact that, you know, whether there's some contention around this issue or not, that this is a room full of, you know, willing partners who are willing to come in and step in and do things for veterans. I think, philosophically, I have a problem with this body, not our great little six here, gang of six, but with the body in general, when we don't recognize that there is a lot of federal dollars in and around the military that we leave on the table because we can't, some of our stuff sends down to Ways and Means and dies, and yet there's federal dollars attached to those things because we have, you know, we can't get the state dollars to pull down the federal dollars. And since these rooms are otherwise the same characters who come here all the time, and we don't have veterans who are, you know, thronging at the door, beating down the door for these services, and we continue to be their voice, the six of us continue to be their voice, that we can't pull down those federal dollars, and we can't get our colleagues in the rest of the building to understand that as a donor state at the federal level, when we're only bringing back 93 cents of every dollar Oregon gives, and we are, by and large, I mean, our state's on food stamps, and our state is, you know, generally very poor, and we see our counties are suffering compared to other parts of the country that are doing really well, and we can't find a way to bring back some more of those pennies on the dollar through our military programs. It is shameful, in my mind, that we can't, our stuff goes down to Ways and Means and dies, because for lack of advocacy in the Ways and Means side of this thing. So I'm hopeful that, you know, as we get through our last little round of bills, that we continue to put pressure on our colleagues to move those things and get them out the door, and that we can bring back those federal dollars so that we're making things happen.
Very well put, Representative Parrish. Thank you. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While we're kind of giving flowers to the living, he stepped out of the room, but I just want to acknowledge that I have really missed the advocacy, the organization of Major Paul Evans.
Yep.
Yes.
When Paul was with the governor's office, he did an amazing amount of work to coordinate CVSOs and in with legislative things, you know, to make things better. We missed that at the state level. Paul did a fantastic job of recognizing those federal dollars and trying to direct us in down the right path.
Thank you very much. Weren't you in military police, Representative Huffman?
Yes.
You go rest them.
I noticed the donuts, and I noticed the two ex-cops have
them. I noticed the cops and the firemen have
them. It explains a lot, doesn't it?
I simply allowed him to slide his second donut towards me.
Yeah, there we go.
Representative Matthews.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you pointing that out to everybody that could not see it. Representative Huffman is exactly right, and we will continue to talk about this, and it's unfortunate. It is, and thanks for pointing out the positive about this group and their desire to serve our veterans. That's very important. And yet, it is the unfortunate reality, and I've said it before, I'll continue to say it, that our veterans deserve to have champions in this building that are forcing their agenda forward. They don't come here on their own.
Right.
This room is not filled full of veterans. They've done their job. We've asked them to do more than they ever thought possible. They signed the line, and people can say, hey, you signed the dotted line, but they didn't sign that line assuming they'd leave their families, you know, three and four and five times on behalf of this country. They've done that admirably. And so here we are now looking at legislation that we're trying to pass through and do some good things for our veterans. And I got to tell you my concern. If there are not people serving in these seats and sitting in those seats that aren't willing to put their neck out there to say, we are going to do this, by God, and get it done for these folks, then these issues are just going to start diminishing. And it won't be long until we're just simply passing resolutions and you know, concurrent this, memorial that, and nothing will ever happen. And if we want to just keep going to photo opportunities and walking in parades with these folks and tell them what a great job they've done, then so be it. But I got to tell you, if you're not going to bust your butt to get some policies and procedures in place that do something for people and their families, and by God, I just don't... I just don't know what else to do. It's clear to me veterans are just, you know, they're all about service, but they're not interested in being, you know, before this group. And I get that. They shouldn't have to be. They've done enough. Be with your family. Let us take care of that. But we have got to force our colleagues, and we've got to force people in the building, including agencies, to come together and realize that we are going to be the state that's going to lead this nation in how we treat our veterans. And oddly enough, we don't have a post in this state. So Fort Oregon exists. It's very alive and well. And we've got to take care of these people that are taking care of us. That's all I'll say. Thanks again for the hearing. And thank you all out there. And I think it was best put, this may have been an artificial argument today, and I appreciate that comment. We may be discussing something that we can figure out relatively easily. I don't think anybody's trying to throw a dart at one another for not caring about veterans. Okay. That's the beauty of this committee and the beauty of the group that comes before us. So thank you very much for your time.
All right.
You were a very forceful statement, Representative Matthews.
I'm telling you.
With that, I'd just like to share what I feel is the sense of the committee that we're going to throw a little holy water on the continued use of federal dollars as first dollar. That money is on the table and available in a time when our state is faced with exceedingly diminished resources, and our agencies are doing the very best job they can with the dollars that they have, and to the extent that we can augment those dollars with some federal funds, so much the better. Again, recognize the tremendous job and the interests that drove everyone here, which is our veterans. Thank you all very much. Anything else for the good of the order? Not seeing anything. We're going to, our next meeting will be on Monday. And we have carried over House Bill 4063. And we're going to have, we're going to try and have a informational hearing on the World War II Veterans Memorial, an update on where that's at the suggestion of Representative Matthews. Co-Chair Esquivel.
You know, I wouldn't mind having an update, kind of where are we at with the Ranger?
Okay. We can do that as well. I don't know if they have traveling speakers, and I think they could put something together for us very quickly.
Kind of an update of where they're at, because that started in this committee, I believe.
And there has been some movement on that project, and I know that they would love the opportunity to kind of read us on that.
Two or three sessions ago.
Very good. Anything further? Committee members, thank you very, very much. I'm going to close the informational hearing and adjourn our meeting. Thank you all very much.